and Marvin Bissinfun. At the same time, Mar said the Marisa Dorsh, the Sarah Dorakanaher. You see a generation when the suffering is just flowing like a river. Shakakelo, wait for it. And the mantra that I hear from so many people is, we need Mashiach, we need Mashiach, we need Mashiach. There's too much going on, there's too much going on, there's too much going on. So I thought to myself that the next year I'm going to give will be the Simcha year, because that will be right before Purim. Actually, somebody said something very cute to me this week in Shul. She said, aren't we so lucky we have so much extra time this year? I said, I don't feel like I have extra time. She said, no, we'd be rushing into Purim now. Pesach would be here if it wouldn't be this year. So that's a very interesting thought to think about. And I thought I would talk a little bit about Galus and Geula, because I think that's something very relevant, and then hopefully connected to Purim as well, because it is on its way, and next week is actually Purim Katan. I used to run my own seminary, and when we had it, you can see if you can implement this anywhere. If it was a leap year, which happened a few times, on Purim Katan, which is the small Purim, because it's the 14th of the month, the first Adar, the girls would come in the morning, we'd have a little nursery set up, like little chairs and a PlayStation, a little kitchen, because it's a little Purim, which is just a cute, what do you call that when you do that in the camp? You call it make a, like a shtick, you call it anything. Okay, so I'm actually going to quote a little bit directly from Rav Dessler in the Mitzvah of Eliyahu, but mostly we're going to go look inside. And this is Chelek Gimel that we're looking at of Rav Dessler Mitzvah of Eliyahu. And it's interesting where he starts and the first point that he makes, because as I was preparing this lecture, which I like to prepare in advance because I like to prepare when I have time, and I like to prepare with Isha Hadas because I think you can tell that I don't have a lot always in my life, and hence the star on my face. The Nechtam Yahu that I started preparing was right when they started talking about the altercation between Russia and Ukraine, which is obviously still developing as we're talking now. If those of you who don't know about that, tune into world news, because that is definitely something that is frightening that is going on right now in the world, and we don't know what the implications will be. We don't know where it's going to go. But this is what Rav Dessler says. It is a chesed to Hashem that he is holding back the sinah of the Goyim. Okay, the amount of sinah, the amount of hatred that the Goyim have for us, we cannot even comprehend. Although we are currently living in a time, now that we are a full 60 years post-Holocaust, where the ugly face of anti-Semitism is rearing its head unabashed. So that for a long time post-Holocaust, it was not politically correct to be anti-Jewish, even if you felt it inside, because the world had already suffered such a blow. I'm going to start my drinking. I will start with the tea. I actually changed my mind. It's probably cool as well. I don't know how to drink from those covers. Do you? A lot of people do. I just don't. And I'm going to begin with the pasuk from the Torah. That quote on the Medrash on this pasuk, where Hashem says to Yaakov, Al tira avdi Yaakov. Do not be afraid, my servant Yaakov. Any Muncie people who know of the beautiful Klatsko family? You, anybody? Okay, Rabbi Klatsko with his sons actually took all the Motzei Shabbos Zmiros actually have a list of all the different terms that Yaakov Avinu is given throughout Tanakh, And the theme of this Zemer is Al Tira Avdi Yaakov, do not be afraid, my servant Yaakov. So if you'd like to check it out after this, you're welcome to do so, because it's really a very, very beautiful niggun of the classical family singing together Al Tira Avdi Yaakov. Okay, this statement of Al Tira Avdi Yaakov, just to give you context, is told to Yaakov Avinu after, anyone know? When was he afraid? He woke up from his dream. He had seen this dream. In his dream, he saw a ladder so high with Malachim climbing to the sky. And he sees everyone going up and coming down. And there is one Malach that he just sees going up, 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 up. And he does not go down. Pasuk says in Ovadia, Im titein, im tagbiya kanesher. If he goes as high as a nesher, and who are we talking about? We're talking about the fact that there are many antagonists and many enemies that have encountered the Jewish people throughout history. Yaakov Avinu saw their sar. He saw the officer representing them on the celestial plane. He saw their sar going up, and he saw their sar going down. So he saw Egypt going up, he saw Mitzrayim up, he saw the Amamim of Canaan going up, he saw them going down. He saw Asher up, he saw Asher down, he saw Paras up, he saw Paras down, he saw Yavan up, he saw Yavan down, and he sees Edom, which is the representation of Esav, up, 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 not coming down. And he becomes afraid, and Hashem says to him, Al Tira Avdi Yaakov, do not be afraid, Yaakov. He saw all the Malchus coming down, not this one. Ovadia says, "Im tagbia kanesher." If he goes as high as the eagle, "V'im ben kochavim simknaf," and he puts his wing among the stars, "Misham oridem ne'um Hashem," I will bring him down. Don't be afraid; he will fall. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Shachol Minyan Kerah. The Medrash says, Amar Yaakov lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yaakov says before Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Al titein le'Esav harasha ta'avat libo, do not give Esav the taiva of his heart. Why? Because ilmalei hem yotzim machrivim es ha'olam. Because if the Goyim would really be able to do what they want to do, they would destroy the whole world. Okay, so in fact, if you look at the greatest, since the Roman conquest of the world, the greatest power that has risen from Western society, which is what we colloquially include everything in Edom, which we're going to talk about a little bit more, because the ultimate of Edom is Esav's grandson, who we know is called Amalek. And he reared his ugly head, as we mentioned, 60 years ago. And Hitler's objective was to actually, anyone know? He wanted to, somebody fill in the blank.
Kill
all the Jews in the
world.
Okay, there's a famous story in Rabbi Lau's autobiography of how Rabbi Lau met with the former mayor of New York City. His name was Mayor Ed Koch, may he rest in peace. One of the bridges is now named after him. I think it connects Bronx and Manhattan. Am I right? Yes? He was the mayor when I was a little girl, so you can date me. I always knew that Ed Koch was Jewish, so I thought his name was Mayor. Ed Koch. So, it's really true. I also thought dogs grew up to be horses. So, it's called a creative mind. It's already there, Baruch Hashem. And Rabbi Lau tells about the first time he met Mayor Koch, and he met him here in Gracie Mansion, and Koch said to him, I think most of you know Rabbi Lau used to be the chief rabbi of Israel. His son is currently the chief Ashkenazic rabbi of Israel, and Rabbi Lau was a child survivor of the Holocaust. There's a famous picture taken after the Holocaust that was published after the Holocaust of a little boy with his hands up wearing a little cap, and that is Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau. And Meir Koch says to him, it's nice to meet
another survivor. And of course, Rabbi Lau was very, very offended because Ed Koch grew up where? In New York City. And he says, why are you saying that to me? And he says, I was given a tour in Nuremberg of Hitler's offices, Yamach Shmuel Zipro's offices, and I saw Hitler's globe. Hitler's globe had a tag on every location in the world where there were Jews. I saw a census, I don't know where people got these records from the Nazis. They actually had every city in the world that had Jews and the numbers of Jews in every city. So Koch says to Rabbi Lau, he wanted to get me too, okay? So Yaakov says, so the Medrash says that Yaakov says to Hashem, Imalei heim yotzim, if they would be able to do everything they want to do, machrivim es ha'olam, they are going to destroy the entire world. Because we know, and Rav Dessa says this, im ein Yehudim ein olam. Because if there's no Jews, there's no world. Hashem created the world, Bishvil Torah, Bishvil Rashis, who's Rashis? Rashis is Yisrael, Rashis is the Torah. The world's purpose of the world is what is primary, which is Klal Yisrael and the Torah. There's no Yehudim, there's no world. So he says, and I said to you that I prepared this just when the altercation between Russia and Ukraine started. So he says, this is why the nations of the world keep fighting with each other. Just to keep them busy channeling their hatred towards each other. And that's what he says. Because ilmalei heim yotzim, if they would be able to come out, they would destroy. If their hatred was combined, which we know we saw by the story in Parshas Noach of the Dor HaPlaga, they were able to combine their negative energies with each other, their chachmut with each other, their wisdom with each other, they would be able to actually destroy the whole world. Therefore, I'm going to make them angry at each other. An example he gives is the example of Hamishaber Kalim B'chamato, a person who breaks their own possessions when they're so angry. So that the Goyim and the world really all hate, they all hate us, but they're so angry that what do? They destroy each other. And that's Hashem's method of keeping them away from us. I don't know where this shiur goes. Just goes on my Torah, right? And if they would all gather against the powers of Kedusha in this world, which is what they really want to do, who knows where Kedusha would go. And he says, the ein zechut la'olam, there is no merit to the world if there are no Yehudim. That's exactly the word. There's no zechut to the world. There's no Jews. Hashem has to keep the Jews here, and yet they hate us so much. And he quotes a pasuk from the Nabi Yeshaya. He said that there are some recent returnees from their seminary experience in Eretz Yisrael. How many are you? Just raise your hands. Oh, quite a few. Okay, so I'm still a returnee from Eretz Yisrael, and I'm on year number 14. And in a second, I could cry, because I miss it every day. And the first year I was here, people would actually ask my husband, what's wrong with the rabbits? People would ask me, and I'd say, L'man Tzion, Lo'ech Hashem, L'man Yisraelayim, Lo'ech Ko, which is from the Navi Yeshaya, which means for Tzion, I'm not going to, Ech Hashem, I'm not going to be silent. L'man Yerushalayim, Lo'ech Ko, I'm not going to be quiet when it comes to Yerushalayim, I'm just going to keep talking about it. I'm sorry. But Rav Dessa quotes this pasuk from Yeshayahu 7, Beis Aleph. And he quotes the Targum Yonasan on the Navi. Just for anybody who wants to be careful in understanding the story of the Targum into Aramaic, that Unkelos Hager is the Targum HaTorah. Anytime we say Targum of Torah, it is Unkelos. Anytime we say Targum of Navi, it is Yonasan ben Uziel, who is buried in Nanluka. Okay, so the Targum Yonasan says, on this pasuk, I will not be quiet, I will not be silent for Tzion, and for Yerushalayim, I won't be quiet. Ad da'abi purko l'tzion. Until there is a salvation for Tzion, lo aniach la'amame, I will not let the nations of the world have menucha. They will not have rest. Ve'ad ra'isi nechama l'tzion, until there will be a comfort for Tzion, lo eshkot l'machuse. I will not be quiet. I will not let them have peace. There is a unique shutfut. It's very interesting. Although we're moving into a holiday that is celebrating the fall of Persia, right? That's the Purim story. There is a partnership that Rav Volba talks about in the Purim story, which is a very unique, he says, very unique partnership with the Shutfut. They were Mishutaf, they joined forces. The power of Paras with the power of Amalek. So that the ultimate evil incarnate of the Purim story is the combo of Persia with Edom. And that's what comes out in this story. And it's actually very interesting, because what I just said is, if they join forces, they want to kill us. When they get angry at each other, they leave us alone. And if you look how the story plays out, what happens? When Ahasuerus and Haman are joining forces, they want to kill us. What happens when Ahasuerus gets angry at Haman? We're safe. So that it really works. It really works in what in the paradigm that we said. And he goes on and he says, Edom doesn't fall like everybody else. Remember, Yaakov's looking up at this ladder and he's just going up, 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 and he's not falling. He says, Edom is represented by the Chazir. The Chazir is the pig. Zu Edom. Shehu Gerat Lo Yigar. The amazing thing of Edom is that it's Lo Yagar. It does not. Gerat Lo Yagar means that it doesn't. Anybody know?
Chew its cud.
It doesn't chew its cud. Okay, Gera lo yagar. The famous thing about the pig is, why is the pig see, the worst not kosher animal?
It looks kosher.
Thank you, Serena. And I gave a nice, you and I gave a nice introduction as well. Thank you.
And okay. We'll put him at the fire.
Okay, thank you. So what does the pig do? The pig sticks out its four appendages, and it shows that it's cloven. It shows that it has cloved hoofs. So it says, ha-ha, kosher! But what doesn't the pig do? It doesn't chew its cud. So it's the ultimate faker. It's the ultimate show-off who's a liar. That's the pig, okay? But he says, and that's geira lo yagar. If I had a board, I would write it. Okay, but we see in there the lashon of gimel reish, right? Geira lo yagar. And the Medrash goes on to say, She'ena goreret malchus acharea. It doesn't pull. For those of you who went to Orthodox day schools, this is a Mishnah of a Chazal that they very much like to teach to little kids. Mitzvah, goreret mitzvah. So we all know what goreret means. It means that we had a little train in our classroom, right? And the mitzvah is pulling along another mitzvah, and actually, in Israel, if you park in a place where you should not be parked, it says, Rechev Zar Yigarer, which means unauthorized vehicles will be towed. Okay, so this is the Sharesh, and this is the Chazer. She'ena goreret malchus achareha. There is no other enemy of the Jewish people that's being pulled after Edom. They are the super antagonist throughout history. V'lama karat shema chazir. Why is Edom called a chazir? Because mechazeret atara leba'aleha. Because eventually from Edom, the crown will go back to where it's supposed to go. Mechazeret chazir, chazer, mechazeret. It's bringing back from Chozer, returning. That the Malchus, that Mashiach will be, when Mashiach comes, will come and shine out of Edom. And then he says something that made me cry. It really made me cry. And I said to my husband, I said, I don't know how this teaches to people. Because he says something that's very truthful, but frightening. The power of Edom, the power of Amalek, is the Chazir. Anytime we call somebody a Chazir, what are we saying about them? Has anyone grown up in a home where this term is used? You're being a chazer. What does it mean?
Greedy.
What?
Greedy.
You're being greedy. You're being gluttonous, right? You're taking too much. Don't be a chazer. That's me, Lashon Chazir, right? The chazir represents a world that serves the physical. The chazir represents indulgence and pleasure. And Amalek has different ways that it encounters us. Sometimes he tries to be our friend. Sometimes he tries to kill us. I think we said that in our last class, that I quoted Rav Shor Shlita, who says, more dangerous than Esav's bite was Esav's kiss. So one of their best ways to get Klal Yisrael is to get them to be tempted by their world of indulgence. Overindulgence, says Rav Dessler, is the exact opposite of a life of Kedusha. Now, a life of Kedusha doesn't mean I don't enjoy anything, but the overindulgence is the exact opposite of Kedusha. And that the coming of Mashiach is when Chaye HaOlam Yismotetu, the actual life of our world, what we think is our world, will shake. And one of the most frightening tragedies, I think, that I've heard about that is being discussed quite a bit, as we are possibly emerging from COVID, depending on where you live, is that many are saying that there was an encouraging trend that was occurring at the beginning of COVID in terms of knowing what matters in life and simplifying life and prioritizing life, and we are emerging right back into an even greater orgy of from indulgence. And that's where we are. And it's very frightening when you read something like this, because he says only when that is over, Yivaka Kashachar Oro, the light of Hashem can shine when we realize that what matters is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says that Galus, the definition of Galus is Shechina Begalusa. Galus represents a Shechina in exile. You can't find Shechina. That the Tumah is so strong in the world that you can't find Kedusha anywhere, because the pull towards the opposing forces of Kedusha is just so strong. It is the mantra of the world. I recall when my husband was a Rebbe at Eish HaTorah, when we were still living in Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Noach Weinberg Zatzal was still alive. One of the last things he did while he was still a healthy Rosh Hashiva, Rosh Hashiva Eish HaTorah, I have to watch my watch, I'm fine, was he took the Rabbeim from Eish HaTorah on a tour of the concentration camps. And his goal in taking the Rabbeim on a tour of the concentration camp, for those who don't know about Rav Noach Weinberg, he was one of the founders of the Kirov movement as we know it today. His yeshiva Eish HaTorah was one of the first. He actually had another yeshiva prior to Eish HaTorah. Very fascinating reading for those of you who are looking for a very intellectual read of a Gadol's life, would be reading the Rav Noach biography by Yonatan Rosenblum. So I've recommended a song and a book. And Rav Noach really felt that he could push his cry to save the Jews of America by taking them to concentration camps, because he said over and over how the pull of America is going to kill more Jews than Hitler did. Okay? And that's really where we are in the year 2022. that 100 years after the major influx of Jews moving from Europe to America, I would say probably 75 to 80% of those original Jews of 100 years ago do not have Jewish descendants. So that I can tell you that almost every Baal Tshuva that I know says to me they are raising the last Jews in their entire family lines, which is crazy. Okay, so that's just a picture of where America is today. I think, does anyone know where the intermarriage rate is at?
Too high.
Well, that it is, but it's been too high for too long. So it went over 50 a long time ago, 50%. I think it's in the 70% by now. Probably, maybe even higher. And perhaps we can learn something from this. So I wanted to read something inside, which is why I took the Sefer with me. And I thank Hashem for helping me have ready what I wanted to take with me, because it was really just a quick run out of my house with a scar on my face. And he says, when the Midah of Gava grows in Am Yisrael, they are full of themselves, and they are in the hand of the Malchus of the fourth one. And he calls the fourth kingdom, he equates all together Edom, Rome, the children of Amalek. Their Midah is Gaiva, and the power of it is Kochi Ve'otzem Yadi, which the Torah says is the belief in it is my strength that makes my success happen. And this is the fight of Ruchnius against Kedusha. And in that fight, Hememidu Gashmius Mol Ruchnius. So that one of the greatest fights against Kedusha is the fight of physical pleasure as opposed to spirituality. And that's why he says that the Zohar tells us that Amalek is in many places, in terms of being compared to an animal, is compared to a dog. No offense to any dog owners here. That animal can have a lot of chutzpah. This is the power of the Jewish people when they said, and we're heading towards Timcha Ezecher Amalek. When the Jewish people were tired, v'yageya, they said, Hayesh Hashem, v'kerbeinu imayim. Is Hashem with us? I don't see him. He's not there. Miyad v'yavo Amalek, Amalek comes. Amalek looks for our weak spot and then bites. Looks for our weaknesses and gets us. And this is the chutzpah, the tumah. And that is why the Torah has told us to absolutely destroy it. I was just sharing in the car with Zipporah. I had read an article about 10 to 15 years ago. They actually published in Israel. They were allowed to be known. The man who pushed the plug that dropped the floor out of under on Eichmann, Yimach Shemo B'Zichro. He was hung after a trial in Israel that he found in South America. And he testifies that he said the bracha b'shem Amalekus, Timche and Zecher Amalek. To destroy Amalek, this is why we have to destroy him. Because that power of Amalek is the power of Ein Shmo Shalom. His name is not Peace, Ve'en HaKisei Shalom, Ad Sheyimche as Zecher Amalek. This is the power of Amalek, which is the ultimate power of destruction. And his MO is either getting the Jewish people to completely indulge in physicality or physically killing them. So I think what's going on in America is a little bit of both. And our avoda is to fight this. And I'm watching my watch, and I want to end up with something positive. The Klal Yisrael to best Amalek, And I said this was preparation for Purim. I think that was the name of this year. Is to counter the kolchos of Amalek in the world. To become closer to Kedusha. In any way possible. And to counter that world of physical, belief in the physical, belief in indulgence, belief in my power, belief in me, belief in so much of what represents Tumah in the ultimate way, which is a world that is trying to destroy any moral or ethical fiber of life, of family life, and to reconnect to something that is endless and true. And I found on H.com a fascinating TED Talk. And it's called The Science of Happier Spending. I thought that was something nice to plug into here. And it's given by a man named Michael Norton, who is a professor at Harvard and a member of the Behavioral Insights Corporation of Harvard. Okay, so that he opens with the premise that people say money can't buy happiness, and he says it can. And I know we're taking a little bit of a turn. We'll come back. And he says that he looks at a CNN study that studies, that did a study polling many, many different lottery winners over time, and they found that they were all depressed, out of money, and antisocial because they didn't know how to spend their money. Everybody was running after them for their money, so they stopped liking people, and how actually it led to their downfall. So how does money make us happier? So their study went like this, and I just think it's so cool because it's such MS of what our Torah is, because anything that they discover in the world around us that is MS has to be Torah. Goes together. So they went to Vancouver University and they gave a group of students $20 bills and $5 bills, and they asked them to rate, this is 9 o'clock in the morning, they asked them to rate their happiness level. I don't know if it was a scale of 1 to 10, whatever it was, he doesn't say. And then he split them into two groups. One group was supposed to spend the money on others, and one group was supposed to spend the money on themselves. So 5 and $20 bills, and they were going to check in with them at 5 o'clock. What they found at 5 o'clock is across the board, the people who spent money on themselves, their happiness level did not improve, while the people who spent money on others had marked improvement. And it was interesting, he says, and he likes to bring this point out, that he was studying university students, so the people who spent money on themselves, most of them spent their money, they had $5 to $20 bills at Starbucks. And the people who spent money on others, most of them also spent their money buying coffee for other people at Starbucks. And he said there was no difference between how much money you spent, was it 5 or 20 on other people, they had the same increase in happiness, which we know Chazal say, echad hamarbe, echad hamamit, one could give more and one could give less, milvad sheyechaven libo lashamayim. So as long as you have intent to give something to somebody else for a spiritual reason, then you will be happy no matter how much you have to give. So the example I like to give is that we know that a base of Migdash, when it came to certain karbanos, the poor person could bring, if they needed to bring a karban, the poor person could bring grains from his field, and the rich person could bring a cow. And Hashem could like the grains of the poor person more than the cow of the rich person. If the poor person is coming and saying, give him from what I have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the rich person has 100 other cows at home and he's bringing one. So what's fascinating, he says that at that time, is that he said, okay, Canada is not representative of the world, it's a wealthier society. Let's do it in a poorer society, and he did it in Uganda with young people. They found the same exact results, except they weren't buying coffee, they were buying medicine, they were buying food. So you see where the priorities are. And they continued in 136 countries with information from Gallup polls, and they found that giving money is what makes people happy. And they did this experiment in businesses, they did this experiment in sports teams, and they found across the board businesses where they increased the givingness among the business members were more successful financially, and teams that became giving people were obviously being dominating their leagues. Okay, this is an MS. So we go and we move from being selfish, we move from being gluttonous, we move from taking, 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 we move from indulgence, indulgence, indulgence into giving, and I would like to translate that giving into also giving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is what's going to make us happier people. So we're moving now into the Simcha mode of Adar. And essentially, I'm going to end with a quote from Rav Hova. I think I'm okay. Rav Hova says, this opening of our Purim story, are we getting excited? I don't know what Serena told me. But here we go. Getting in the mood? So the Purim story represents, so it's interesting because Yavan also represents, and Yavan Paras also represents gluttony. It's a society of Riboy Hana, so that the party of Achashverosh is Kirtzon Ish Va'ish. It's everybody, whatever you want, you can have it, okay? The party of Achashverosh was the ultimate in indulgence. The Gemara Megillah asks, Bishmil Ma, why did the Jews have to deserve Klaya in the Purim story? Why were they assigned to be destroyed? Why did Hashem allow that to happen? And the answer the Gemara gives is very simple. Because they enjoyed his party. Because they enjoyed. They enjoyed. And the Medrash says that Mordechai at Tzadik, even though he told them not to go, once they were going, he was there. He was there to watch the wines to make sure that they weren't drinking Yayin Nesaf. He was there to make sure that everything was kosher. That Achashverosh actually gave everybody exactly what they wanted. So they got gourmet kosher food in the White House. Whatever they wanted, they would get, and it was kosher, but they enjoyed it too much. They weren't supposed to join such a world of decadent indulgence. That wasn't what was supposed to happen. This is not a Jewish way. Fascinating, he says, that it was, and just to quote Rav Hova directly, Hayu la'yudim lehitrachek me'olam shekulo hanaha. Jews should have distanced themselves from a world that is complete indulgence. Notice the Pesach ads that are starting to come out and take a look at them. Okay, so the Jews should have distanced themselves from a world that is complete indulgence. The rabbi speaking is at the corner, in the front. They should have distanced themselves from a world that is all indulgence, and this is why they are punished. The flip is that when they are destined to be destroyed and killed, they do teshuvah, v'nahapohu, and they're saved. And what is their gift or promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they will have now that they did tshuva and they're saved? Mishta v'simcha! They're told to party! So that is a very ironic twist in our story, and I said that we would end up with bringing us back to Purim. So that the Jews are actually told to celebrate and party. What kind of party? With yayin, with wine, with food, with good, with happy. But if you think about what the theme of Purim is in terms of the mitzvos hayom of Purim are about, answer me,
giving.
It's about giving. It's about being a giving people, being an outward bound person, being a person who is other bound, and obviously other bound begins with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. So that my reality as of a Jew is outbound, so to speak, right? We have inbound highways, outbound highways. We are outbound people. We are a people who's looking out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we want to find, and I may have said this here before because it's one of my greatest quotes that people will remember, so I like to say it because we do say Birchat HaMazon, we bench often, depending on where bread is in your life, at least on Shabbos, a few times. One of the best lines in benching, so you remember this, V'nitzachem v'seichel tov v'nei elokim v'yadam. Right? After that is harachavan, v'zikin v'zimot. Right? Okay? So, the line that is so paramount that Chazal say in there in terms of where our life should go, I want you to understand what this line means. What does chaim mean? What does chaim mean? Anyone know? Translated in many places as charm, goodness, kindness. It says about Esther, the Gemara says, chut shel chesed mashuch aleha. That when Esther was matzachim be'inei hamelech, chut shel chesed mashuch aleha, that means a strand of chesed was beaming from her, pulling out of her. So that when a person has chaim, there's just goodness emanating from you. That's chaim. Nimtzach chaim. We should find goodness, people should find goodness in us, and seichel tov. How do we translate seichel tov? What's seichel? Your intellect, your mind, tov. Everybody knows what tov means. Everybody, what's tov?
Good.
Find good intellect. What does that mean? How do we understand that? Nimtzachim and seichel tov. What's seichel tov? Anybody want to put it together? What it might mean?
A straight intellect.
But what does it mean that we should, that people should find that in us? Right, b'nei Elokim v'adam, in the eyes of God and man, I should find goodness and seichel tov. It means that I should do things that somebody will say about me, good decision, wise. Okay, good mind, seichel tov, you thought well. Who do we want to be finding chaim and seichel tov in whose eyes? In the world of the business world, in the world of the gashmias world, in the world of the foodie world, which world do we want to be successful in? Be'enei? First, God, then people. Be'enei Elokim v'adam. First, in God's eyes, He should look at us and say, I like you. You're doing good. Yemer Tashem, Harachaman, Hu Yizakeinu, Yemos HaMashiach, Olachaye, Olam Haba. Thank you so, so very much. Bracha v'hatzlacha. I look forward to seeing you before the big Purim, but enjoy your little one next week, and we should hear b'tzuros tovos, Meretz HaHashem.